Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Mead. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Looney Lewis, and today I have the honor of introducing a very special guest to the show, Joel Harbaker. Joel is an award-winning teacher, author, speaker, and frequent podcast guest who loves helping young leaders overcome obstacles and grow through courage, confidence, and humility. Before we bring Joel out, let me ask you, do you want to enjoy the finer things in life? Do you want to one day buy a home? How about passing that credit background check for that apartment or for that car you need to get to work? Do you feel your financial security is in jeopardy because of bad credit? Well, my friend, you are not alone, because there are over 80 million others with bad credit. And because of it, they are facing high interest rates as well as constant denial when applying for a home loan, car loan, apartment, and credit card. This does not have to be you anymore. Let me tell you about Next Level Consultant, a credit restoration company. They are here to assist you with three aspects of your financial life: restore your credit, rebuild it, and raise your credit score. And get this, you can begin to see results in as little as 30 days. Next Level Consultants are experts at helping people resolve credit problems using every resource available. Their primary focus is to help you remove, correct, repair, and update inaccurate, misleading, unverifiable late pays, charge-off, collection accounts, bankruptcies, repossessions, foreclosures, inquiries, identity theft, and wrong personal information about you. Y'all, credit repair begins here. With Next Level Consultant, you will get free credit analysis and free credit monitoring with $1 million worth of fraud protection. To start, it usually costs $149, but for you, my friend, as a thank you for being part of my community, you can start today for only $49.99. Book a free consultation today at www.nextlevelconsultant.org to restore your credit today and get your financial life back. All right, morning enthusiasts, let's get back to the show. Now, Joel is quite unique. By sharing personal stories of failure and success, using humor and engagement, Joel teaches leadership principles that audiences can apply as soon as they leave the event. His book, Inverted Leadership, Lead Others Better by Forgetting About Yourself, was a number one bestseller on Amazon. Joel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I love being able to be introduced like that, because nobody knows if you're lying, right? Because you get to write your own introduction and people just assume it's all true. So that's a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. I know you do have a book, and I'm looking forward to hearing about the inverted leadership. So that's not a lie. I did my background check.
Okay, good. All right. Well, that's fine.
So go ahead, Joel. Tell us a little bit more about your background and what brought you here. You know, you're well renowned. You're an author, you're a speaker, and, you know, best-selling author. What was your journey up to this point?
My journey was full of ups and downs. The short version is that I come from a blended family. My parents split up when I was in middle school, and my mom started dating a man about a year later that I still call my stepdad. And I was blessed to be able to attend college at Covenant College in Lookout Mountain, Georgia, a little Presbyterian school, and studied history there and learned a lot about leadership. I actually had a scholarship that took me through a leadership program while I was there. And so that's been a part of my life for about as long as I can remember. Both my parents and my stepdad were retired military, so leadership was a large part of their upbringing as well. I've got two teenage daughters right now, and so my first daughter was born when I was 21 years old, about a month, less than a month after I graduated from college. And so leading a family has been my entire adult life. And there have been times when I feel like I've done that well, and there have been times when I feel like I did that very, very poorly indeed. And so at this point, I'm 37, I'm divorced and remarried. And so what I try to do is to share with other people a lot of what I have learned, both through the good things I've done, but also through the big mistakes I've made. I think a lot of times people remember your mistakes more, and that's okay. If that means that they learn from mine and therefore they avoid them, that's okay. And so that's kind of what brought me here. I've been a high school teacher for 14 years, and I've been a professional speaker for about three. I love being in front of people. I love interacting with audiences. Speaking from the stage is not that different from speaking in front of a classroom, with the exception that people on the stage already want to be there. Mm-hmm. Students, I have to convince that they need to be there, you know? So audiences are actually a lot easier. But I love doing this. I'm passionate about leadership and blended families and education. And I love doing things like this where I get to have conversations about leadership on shows like yours. So thank you again for the opportunity. And I'm just excited to chat with you.
Amazing. What do you teach in high school?
I teach mostly history and Bible. I've taught lots of other things, English, science, math, PE, Bible study skills, but my degree was in history. That's what I spent most of my career teaching.
They let you teach Bible in schools?
I do. Well, I teach at a small Christian school in Alabama. And so Bible class is part of our curriculum. I've taught at other schools. I've taught at at least for Alabama or in North Carolina, I taught at a giant public school of about 1,800 kids. And I've taught at tiny, tiny schools of less than 50. I've taught private school, public school, Christian school, Muslim school. I've done everything from fifth grade through 12th grade. So pretty varied background when it comes to who I've taught and where I've taught.
Yeah, that's impressive. So you have a very versed background when it comes to leadership, because not only your household was all about leadership because your parents were military, but you are out being a leader yourself, teaching these kids all over the country, all these different schools.
Yes, ma'am. And I do. I feel blessed to have been able to do those things. I also have spent a lot of time coaching soccer. I played in college, both here and for one semester in England when I was blessed to get to study over there. And so, again, being a soccer player and then becoming a soccer coach, a large part of athletics is leadership. It's convincing kids or teenagers or young adults to do more work than they want to, or it's convincing them to do things differently than they're used to. And a large part of that is how you frame it and basically answering the question, what's in it for them? And trying to figure out how to make that work better. Because that, to me, that's a large component of leadership. I appreciate you mentioning my book. And in the book, Inverted Leadership, I define leadership very simply. Leadership is the art of positively influencing other people to help them become better versions of themselves. So leadership is all about serving others and helping them grow. And if I do that, that I'm doing my job, whether or not it ever gets recognized or rewarded. The point is that it's not about me. It's about helping other people succeed.
So being a servant leader within itself, right?
Yes, ma'am.
What is what is inverted leadership?
The inverted leadership is that idea that leadership is not necessarily top down in a sort of authoritarian style. Leadership is top down in terms of having authority, but authority and authoritarian, even though they sound similar, are not the same. That is, anybody who's a parent knows you have to have authority over your children, especially when they're younger. But that doesn't mean the same thing as being authoritarian, where all you do is enforce the rules without teaching the kids why the rules are necessary. There's a man that I respect highly. His name's John Croyle. He started a something called the Big Oak Boys and Girls Ranches many years ago. It's basically a second chance home for kids who have been abused or abandoned. And I've heard him speak a number of times, and something he said repeatedly stuck with me. He said that rules without relationship leads to rebellion. And so a large part of being in a position of leadership is helping the people that you are leading understand why the rules and guidelines are what they are. Because if they understand that, then they're going to buy into it more than if you're just enforcing rules without helping them understand it. So inverted leadership is this idea that leadership isn't top-down giving directions and enforcing the rules. Leadership is empowerment coming from the top and then helping other people do better than they were before. That's why it's kind of inverted. It's turned on its head.
Mm. Yeah. And as I hear you speak, I can think of the beauty of having cohesiveness within a team, because even that, as the leader, you should see yourself as part of the team. You're not the leader of the team, right? You're inclusive.
Correct. Yeah. You may be leading the team, but you are not separate from the team, right? You are, just like you said, you're a part of it. And therefore what you do needs to keep that in mind. It needs to factor into how you make your decisions and things like that. Well, again, one of the more famous or well-known sayings in the educational field is that kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's true in any endeavor. If you're running a business of, you know, a giant business of thousands of employees or a small business of 10, if your employees know that you have their best interests at heart, they are more likely to work harder for you. If you're just a cog in a machine, well, you're not going to put forth the same effort. And we've seen that if you study history, especially the history of the Industrial Revolution, when people are treated better, they tend to work harder. And that's another thing that I teach in the book. If you take care of relationships, the results will take care of themselves. Right, a large part of leadership is focusing on creating good relationships, top to bottom, bottom to top, and horizontally among the people that are being led, or the employees, or the soccer players, whatever your situation is.
Yeah, because it goes into the family, because that's our first organization, right? The family. The family is
absolutely
the first organization we're introduced to. And even within that, if you can establish healthy boundaries and healthy relationships, then it will transcend in other areas in the corporate world. With friends and intimate relationships, right? You'll have better relationships there, because there's a really good quote that I know. I think it's biblical as well. And I heard it from church. That's where my source is. And it reads, you should seek to understand and rather be understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that in multiple places. I know Stephen Covey wrote something similar to that in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. But I think you're right. I think if you read through the book of Proverbs, you come across a lot of verses that are very similar to that, you know, talking about listening before we answer and making sure we understand other people rather than just trying to get our voice heard. One of the things I'm working on right now is writing a 31-day devotional for blended families. And there are so many verses in the book of Proverbs, which I'm working from, there's so many verses about the importance of listening, or the foolishness of speaking without fully understanding. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that you're right. I think that's a very key part of leadership, is just making sure that you understand where other people are coming from, what their concerns and worries are, so that you can better respond to them.
Mm-hmm. What I like about you is you take leadership and then you're adding the family aspect to it. Specifically blended families. Tell us about blending families. I know you you have a stepdad at a young age, and I do too, as myself. My parents split up at an early age, but this is very dear to your heart. Blended families are dear to your heart. So tell us about that.
Yes, ma'am. Well, like you mentioned, my parents divorced when I was in middle school, and then my mom started dating another guy that I still call my stepdad, even though they never married. And as an adult, I got married when I was 19. My first daughter was born at 21. My second daughter was born when I was about 23. And their mom and I were married for 8.5 years, and then we divorced, and that was about a decade ago. in that time, their mom has remarried and I remarried about 6 months later. And so my kids are also part of blended families. They have a mom and a dad. They also have a stepmom and a stepdad. And at their mom's house, they have a younger brother, right? Because their mom and their stepdad have a son together. And so, yeah, the idea of blended families or step families, however you want to term it, it's very dear to my heart because I'm part of one, but also because the school I teach at is associated with that Big Oak Ranch that I mentioned earlier. And so a lot of the kids I teach come from a different kind of blended family. It's more along the lines of adoptive or foster families, which are also blended, but in a different kind of way. And so again, at any given time, 20% of my student population in my classroom comes from that kind of blended family. Well, when you take into account divorce and remarriage and these other families, anywhere from 30 to 50% of my students come from non-traditional, non-nuclear households. Well, that's a huge number. Mm-hmm. But honestly, it's just becoming more and more common in our society. I read a statistic not long ago that said something along the lines of 1,000 new blended families are created every day in the United States. 1,000 new blended families are created every day, right? Even if that number is a little bit inflated, what if it's only 500, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of blended families. That's a lot of kids who are growing up in non-nuclear, non-traditional homes. And unfortunately, most of the examples that we see in the culture about what step families look like are not good examples.
Right.
I'm very blessed that my parents got along better after their divorce than they did when they were married. And which is even more impressive, my dad became good friends with my stepdad and my stepdad's father, and they all got along really well. We still had Thanksgivings together where we would have mom and dad and mom's boyfriend and mom's boyfriend's dad and mom's mom, all the kids, all at the same Thanksgiving table.
Wow.
And I didn't know that was weird until I went to college, and I would tell that story and people would look at me like I was making stuff up. And I'm like, no, really, like that was my Thanksgiving.
That was your normal.
That's right. That was normal for me. And so what I'm looking at it is I ask the question, why aren't more people doing that? And the simple answer is pride and pain. Right. Those are the two. One, pride, because we don't like our egos injured. And a lot of people think, well, I don't want to see my ex with anybody else. And so I don't want to have to be around them. And therefore, we're not going to do that. Well, that's the pride part. The other part is pain. Maybe your ex really hurt you. And so you just can't stand to be around them. Well, I'll be honest, I can understand that. At the same time, you need to figure out a way to at least get along well enough with your ex to be able to co-parent effectively. So one of the big things I try to do is I work a lot with other blended families trying to help them figure out how to take the next step forward, right? I tell people I try to help them go from terrible to bearable and then beyond, because there are some blended families that just need a little bit of help. There's some blended families where the parents can't even talk to each other without it turning into a shouting match. And the people that suffer the most are the kids. And so I want to try to help fix that, because I've been very blessed to see it done well. And I want to help people realize there are a lot of good examples out there. You just may not have seen them. And so I'd like to help you figure out how to do those things in a more positive, more cooperative kind of way.
Yeah, it gets really dark with step parents, step dads involved. You know, like abuse can be happening, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, worst case scenario, physical abuse. So it is scary. Having a blended family, and your outlook on it is very different from what is the stigma, right? From what is the norm, what is we're hearing out there for blended families. For you, and I know this is a mission for you, what are some of the tips of being an effective stepdad?
Well, I'm not actually a stepdad. I have to make sure that I clarify that, because I don't want to falsely represent myself. I am a biological dad, but my kids have a stepdad. My wife didn't have any kids coming into our marriage, but I work with a lot of stepdads, and I tell them a couple different things. The first one is in terms of the other adults in the situation, right? So whether you're a biological or a step parent, what you need to do is you need to be willing to allow the other adults to be heard. Even if you don't necessarily agree with them, you need to be willing to respectfully dialogue with them. That's the first major step, because if you can get along with each other, or at least be respectful of each other, that's going to go a long way towards building a firm relationship for the future. So that's the first thing that I would say. The second thing that I try to remind step parents, there are actually two key principles that I talk about. One of them is this. You need to be the adult that you want your kids to become. You need to set an example, right? Be a role model for them. And that doesn't mean only when it's easy, right? We tell kids all the time, life's not fair. And you just have to deal with it. Well, guess what? When you're an adult, that's still true. And so if you feel like you have been hard done by or you have been wronged, you may be correct. That may be entirely valid. At the same time, that doesn't mean that it's okay to lash back out at the people who hurt you. Again, we teach that to our children. Just because somebody says mean things about you doesn't mean you say mean things about them, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing is you need to set the example, be the example, show your kids the kind of adult you want them to become. The second one is also something we teach children, and that is remember the golden rule from our childhood. Treat other people the way you want to be treated. So set a good example for your kid. And treat other people well, even if they don't show you that same courtesy. Now, those two things are simple, but they are not easy. That's a phrase that I learned from one of my coaches who said that all the time. This is simple, but it's not easy. So having a better blended family is simple, but it's not easy, right? Be respectful of other people. Set a good example for your kids. Remember the golden rule. Those are things that are simple in concept. They're not easy to do. When you think about the emotions involved in a divorce, you think about things like pain or heartache or possibly betrayal or dishonesty or whatever. Like it's easy to say, oh yeah, just treat them well. But that's really asking a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Especially if egos have been bruised.
Absolutely.
And I agree with you. The kids do feel it. You know, mm-hmm. they're the ones that you know, they can grow up traumatized. And then you have a whole generation now
right.
that is hurting and bruised and don't know how to have healthy relationships and I think you're absolutely right that it's a possibility. There is a way to actually make this amicable for everyone.
Absolutely. And what you said is right. The danger is, what if we have an entire generation of kids who grow up damaged by their parents because their parents couldn't get along, right? I would love it if I didn't have a job as a blended family coach because nobody was getting divorced and remarried. Mm-hmm. That's simply not true. I would love to help reduce the divorce rate because the reality is the divorce rate for second marriages is even higher than for first marriages. And so people who are in a blended family, most of the time, at least one of them has already been through a divorce. Sometimes it's because of one of the spouses passed away. But most step families are due to a previous divorce from one or both parents. Well, that means they are even more likely to get divorced a second time. Well, I want to help those numbers come down. I want to help stop there being a second divorce after a first one. And I want to do that by helping parents get along better together. Again, I would love to work myself out of a job, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
because it goes back to that organization again, right? It's the first organization we're introduced to as kids,
that's right.
As individuals. And your sole mission is to make that organization harmonious, change the culture there.
That's right. Yeah. And like you said, too, it's our first organization. And so a lot of who we are as people and how we relate to others is informed by what we learned, both consciously and unconsciously growing up. And we need to be very, very aware of the lessons and the morals and the ethics that we are teaching our children. And I say that as a person who has made tremendous mistakes with that in the past.
Yeah. And you were candid. You said, you know, some days you do well at fatherhood, other days, not so much.
That's right.
You question yourself.
Well, the thing is, I would love to say that I never make mistakes as a dad, but either of my daughters could very honestly tell you that's simply not the truth.
Yeah. the human error, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the thing is, I've taught high school for years and I've coached girls soccer for years. And so I thought, oh, this will be a breeze when my kids get older. I know how to handle, you know, like middle school to high school girls. I've been teaching them for years. That's no problem. Yeah, no.
Yeah, right.
Having two of them in my house is very different than having 30 of them in a soccer program. It's just not. I mean, there were some insights that were helpful, but I thought I knew a lot more than I actually knew.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. And that's dangerous.
Yeah. And I'm curious to hear about your morning routine because I know your girls are older now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of have your morning back to yourself. So tell us, how do you get up, dress up, and show up?
So I normally get up before everybody else in the house. Very rarely is anybody awake before I am. And that's just because I'm always an early riser. I get up about 5:15 and we have two We have two rescue dogs, Butterscotch and Bruiser. They are 50 to 60 pound bulldog and pit bull mixes that we got from a couple different shelters. And as soon as I get up, they are awake and ready to go. So I got to let the dogs out and feed them. And while the dogs are eating, I sit down and I do my Bible reading and praying for the day to start off that way. And then after that, I normally try to sit down and get a little bit of work done before I head to school. Now, obviously, when we're recording this, schools aren't in session, and so I'm doing schoolwork from home. But that's normally how I start, as I get up. I take care of the dogs, because if I don't, they let me know that they're not happy with that. And then I try to take care of getting myself ready for the day spiritually. I read 3 or 4 chapters of the Bible. I spend some time in prayer for my family, for my job, for whatever else may be going on. And then I'm ready to sit down and attack some work. And now that I'm working from home a lot more, I typically try to get in a good hour of work before most other people are awake in the house. And so that allows me to get stuff done free of distractions. It allows me to really focus and get done with whatever the single largest task of the day is. I can focus on that. I actually learned this recently from a guy named Chris Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L. He taught me about this concept of an MVP, a most valuable productivity block. And so I'll sit down and try to block out 90 minutes in the morning before anybody else gets up, so that I can get some, whatever the biggest, hardest thing that I want to do the least, whatever that is that day, if I can get that done first, the rest of my day is a breeze. And if I can get that done early without any distractions, that's a huge help. And I've been doing that now for a couple of weeks, and it really completely boosted my productivity in the past couple of weeks. So that's something I strongly encourage people to do, is, you know, get up an extra half hour or 45 minutes early and just knock out your toughest task of the day before anything else. And then by the time you have breakfast, and you've already had a good day, you've already been productive.
A miracle happened when you're up early. It's like God speaks to those who are up early.
Yeah, well, you know, Ben Franklin said it really well a couple hundred years ago. He said, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. You know, there have been times when I stayed up late and got up late, or at least later, and I was a lot less productive. So go to bed on time, get plenty of sleep, get up early, and then get your work done. One of the other things I strongly recommend as part of a morning routine is to get a good night's sleep. And one of the ways you do that is by doing something else Chris taught me, by doing a digital detox. An hour before you go to bed, turn off all your screens, put your phone down, let your brain relax, right? Get those blue lights out of there, whatever, and let your brain calm down before you go to sleep. And you'll be amazed, just within a couple of days, you'll find yourself sleeping better, and it makes it easier to get up and get your day going. The other thing I didn't mention, which is crucial to my morning routine, is as I'm coming out of the bedroom to let the dogs out, I turn my coffee pot on. I drink decaf, but I've got to have my coffee in the morning, even though it's decaf. I love the taste. I love the smell. That's a key part of my morning.
Yeah, no, I like your morning routine. I love the fact that you're up early. Like I said, I'm an early riser as well, and I can attest and agree in agreement with you that it feels darn good when the rest of the world is sleeping if you've accomplished a couple of things off your to-do list.
Absolutely. Do you remember, are you old enough to remember some of the old, there used to be a commercial on TV for the U.S. Army where it would show soldiers getting up and running and doing pull-ups and push-ups in the dark. And it said, I think the tagline was something like, we do more before 6:30 than most people do all day. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. And before I go into the office, it's like 8:30. And I was like, man, I've been up since 4 a.m. I've been up for 4 hours. It's almost lunchtime.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
And you, it's just that sense of productivity is, it's like, mm-hmm. it really sets the tone for the rest
it
of
does.
The day. Yeah.
It's also psychological, because like you mentioned, you've been up for a long time. And so while your competitors are sleeping, you're getting some stuff done. And that's giving you a jump on the day. That's a great thing.
Yeah, because we all have the 24 hours. But Earl Nightingale says, if you wake up an hour earlier than everyone else, by the end of the year, you will have gained 6 weeks of 40 hours.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it is. It's incredible how much more you can get done. And it's just a question of, are you willing to give up something in the evening in order to get that hour of productivity in the morning? Are you willing to give up watching an extra episode of whatever TV show you happen to currently be binging? You know, that kind of thing. My daughter's actually in here while I'm recording this. She's just shaking her head at me. No, she's not. She's not willing to give up whatever that last episode is.
It's like, hashtag not worth it.
That's right. And you know what? At 13 years old, I felt the same way. So I can totally understand that.
Yeah. No, it's phenomenal. Glad you're early riser. And I love that you're starting your day with the word. You're starting your day with God. You're starting with that mental stimulant, like you are feeding your mind already. That positivity to get your day going. And it's in alignment with the successful entrepreneurs that explains your success, because success leaves clues. And you're telling me right now, these are the things that you do. And so my listeners ought to go out and do the same thing if they want your success.
Absolutely. And it's something I've encouraged people for years to do, is to just find, you know, whether it's 10 or 15 extra minutes, whether it's during your lunch break or getting up 10 or 15 minutes earlier, find those 10 or 15 extra minutes. Because like you mentioned, if you can steal, whether it's a whole hour or 10 or 15 or 30 minutes during the day, even if you can't do it every day for a year, even if you can only do it for, you know, let's say you do it for half an hour twice a week, over the course of a month, you've gained a few hours, almost a whole workday, just by stealing that 15 or 30 minutes a couple times a day, or even a couple times a week. So it's something to keep in mind that especially if you're working on the transition from whatever your 9-to-5 is to pursuing what your true passion is, you've got to find those pockets of time that will allow you to get your work done. If I can, I'm gonna share one brief example. The school I teach at is 45 minutes from where I live. So I have an hour and a half in the car every day round trip. So the book that you mentioned earlier, Inverted Leadership, most of that book, the rough draft, was actually written in the car. I would write out on a 3x5 card the outline of a chapter or a section of a chapter, and I would get in the car and I'd drive to school, and I would take my father's old miniature cassette recorder powered by AA batteries, and I would turn it on and set it in my lap, and I would just drive, and I would speak the words to it out loud, and then bring it home, and either my wife or I would type it up, and that became the rough draft of the book. And then I did all the editing during Christmas break or spring break from the school, and then I actually published it over the summer, right, when I had time to do those things in larger pockets. So wherever you have those moments, find ways to use them, and that'll give you a leg up. That'll give you the momentum you need to get moving forward.
You gain time by using that hour and a half to actually work on your book.
Yep. I love using that time to sort of encourage my mind as well. I've listened to dozens, if not hundreds, of audiobooks in the past few years. I've been teaching at this school now for, this is my 7th year. So you're, you know, hour and a half a day times 180 school days a year times, you know, whatever that is, 8-7 years. That's a lot of hours. So I've listened to, hundreds of hours of podcasts. I've listened to tons and tons of books. I've written a book in the car. Just because you have a commute doesn't mean that time can't be productive.
Absolutely. Yeah. All getting pissed or just idle, just not letting your mind run idle and not actually putting something stimulating up there.
Absolutely.
There's a very good quote that goes, "Don't envy what people have. Emulate what they do to have it."
Yeah, that's very good. I like that.
Tim Fargo says that. Yeah. And that's the success here. That's the point I want to drive home, is like, there are, you're successful for a reason. You found your purpose because you're disciplined. You put in place those disciplines, right? And you are using the hour and a half to actually educate your mind, to learn something, to grow, to develop. And that helped you stumble upon your purpose. What are some tips that you can give our listeners on how to find their purpose?
So we actually talked about this in my Bible class this spring. That's a wonderful question. I would encourage people to sit down and just take a few minutes and ask themselves, what is it that you love to do that is also beneficial to other people? What is it that you would do if you just had more free time, or if you were independently wealthy, if you just had, you know, $1 million in the bank? What would you do with your free time? Because for me, I would still love to be involved coaching soccer. I would still love to teach or speak in some capacity. I would love to work with blended families to help them become more positive and more cooperative. So I feel very blessed, because what I want to do is what I already get paid to do. And I feel very, very blessed, because I don't think there are a lot of people in the world that get to say that. The stuff that I want to do are the things that I'm already getting to do. And so that's one way to encourage people to find their purpose, is ask, what is it that you love that's also beneficial to other people? Because I'll be honest, if I were to ask my 15-year-old, what is it you love to do? She'd say, I love to watch The Office. Okay, well, that may be true, but that's not your purpose. What do you love to do that's also beneficial to other people? Well, you know what she loves to do? She loves to take care of little kids. she and her sister both are just tremendously loving people. They like to be around animals. They like to be around little kids, and they have gigantic soft hearts.
Yeah.
Now, between you and me, I don't like little kids. I liked my kids when they were little. I like the other ones I'm related to, most of them. And that's pretty much it.
That's why you're teaching high school.
That's right. That's why I teach high school. I've taught 5 through 12. And the younger the kids are, like grades 5 through 12, the younger the kids are, the less patience I have for them. I've coached everything from little toddlers up to college age kids. The younger the soccer players are, the less patience I have for them. So I know that my purpose is not to be an elementary teacher or a daycare worker or even a little kid Sunday school teacher. That's not my wheelhouse. Right? I've done all those. I've done things like that at different times. But man, that's not where I would choose to spend my time. So ask yourself, what is it you love that also benefits other people? And start looking around that and brainstorming about ideas if you want to find your purpose.
I couldn't have said it any better. That was fantastic. Thank you for sharing that.
Certainly.
Thank you for sharing that. So tell us, how can we connect with you?
Well, I would love to connect with anybody who's listening. Find me on social media. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter under my name, Joel W. Hallbaker. You can also visit my websites. I have 3 different ones that are related to different things. My speaker website is joelwhallbaker.com. A lot of my blended family information you can find at stepdadding.com. And then you can find a combination of the leadership and the blended family information at my original website, which is reallifeleading.com. There's contact Joel forms on all of those. Shoot me an email, shoot me a message via, social media, whatever. And I would love to connect or answer questions or help people brainstorm to find their purposes. If you've got blended families out there who are looking for help, I've put together a complete blended family toolkit. I'd love to send it to them for free if they'll reach out to me. If anybody wants a copy of my leadership books, just have them email me. I'll send them a free PDF of it. I'm not looking to make money off my book. I want to help people. And so if you want a copy of my book, email me. I'll send you a free copy of it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I will put all that on the show notes for our listeners. Joel, it's been a delight. Thank you for your time today.
Lenny, thank you so much for having me on. I've been looking forward to our conversation, and I was not at all disappointed. So thank you so much for letting me come on and chat with you today.
Fantastic. I love to hear that. Such a great show. All right, morning enthusiasts, here is a word from our sponsors or from today's show. Enjoy. Really quick, I want to share with you my new favorite innovative company that is changing the way we wear our jeans. That is Moriello Limited. But first, let me ask you, have you ever wondered how your denim jeans are made or the impact it has on the environment? Did you know that to make one pair of jeans uses about 1,000 gallons of water? I sure didn't know that. Now, this water cannot be recycled due to the heavy chemicals and metals in it. So it just gets wasted and flows out to the nearby rivers and lakes in the countries where jeans are being manufactured, like India, Bangladesh, and China. Okay, so you may be thinking they are not manufactured in the US, so I am safe. But are you? Here's why. This chemically induced water is going into our oceans as well, which is affecting our food chain, our veggies, produce, and our environment. So what is being done about this? Well, Moriello Limited is revolutionizing how our genes are being processed and manufactured, keeping the environment in mind. They are using Genologist finishing technology, which is eco-friendly, to make their denim jeans. These jeans are unlike anything you've worn before. They are durable, breathable, sustainable, stylish, and eco-friendly. What else can you ask for in a pair of jeans? Oh, don't forget sexy. This is revolutionary and ground floor. Moriello just launched their crowdfunding campaign via Indiegogo to raise funds for its R&D department. The campaign is easily accessible via the website www.fashiongoesgreen.com. So go check them out. And as a supporter, you can choose a pair of jeans or a t-shirt as a donation reward. Go to www.fashiongoesgreen.com to grab your new favorite pair of jeans today and support the environment all at the same time.
Do you want to enjoy the finer things in life? Do you want to one day buy a home? How about passing that credit background check for that apartment or for that car you need to get to work? Do you feel your financial security is in jeopardy because of bad credit? Well, my friend, you are not alone, because there are over 80 million others with bad credit. And because of it, they are facing high interest rates as well as constant denial when applying for a home loan, car loan, apartment, and credit card. This does not have to be you anymore. Let me tell you about Next Level Consultant, a credit restoration company. They are here to assist you with three aspects of your financial life: restore your credit, rebuild it, and raise your credit score. And get this, you can begin to see results in as little as 30 days. Next Level Consultants are experts at helping people resolve credit problems using every resource available. Their primary focus is to help you remove, correct, repair, and update inaccurate, misleading, unverifiable late pays, charge-off, collection accounts, bankruptcies, repossessions, foreclosures, inquiries, identity theft, and wrong personal information about you. Y'all, credit repair begins here. With Next Level Consultant, you will get free credit analysis and free credit monitoring with $1 million worth of fraud protection. To start, it usually costs $149. But for you, my friend, as a thank you for being part of my community, you can start today for only $49.99. Book a free consultation today at www.nextlevelconsultant.org to restore your credit today and get your financial life back.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.